We roll on with the 60s. Bill Russell has Wilt's number. Havlicek steals the ball, and Brett Auerbach leaves the bench. It's the Thursday Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance at all the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play, when the F's done I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. John Corrales here from MassLive.com, welcoming you back to the 60s, our run through the 1960s, and we are now firmly in the mid-60s here, all right? Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Wilt goes west, and so they meet in the finals. Havlicek comes along, he steals the ball, Sam Jones is dominant, and we get to the end of Red Auerbach's time as the coach of the Boston Celtics. He moves on upstairs, and we get to, we'll end this conversation with Bill Russell as the soon-to-be head coach of the Boston Celtics. Tomorrow, the final years of Bill Russell. Bill Russell, the player coach. So a lot to get to here. A lot of things happen, and we finish off this run that the Celtics have been on. These are the last of 8 straight championships. That streak is finally broken, and we will start tomorrow's podcast with that streak being broken. So for now, we have now moved into the 1964, 65, 66 stretch, and a lot happens here. So here's my conversation continuing where we left off yesterday. It's me. It's RedsArmy.com's Mike Dinan. The Warriors go to San Francisco. And that means instead of having to go through Wilt Chamberlain in the division finals, they get to go through Wilt Chamberlain in the NBA finals in 1964. And that's a series that goes pretty heavily in Boston's favor. They win that series in 5. Wilt averages 29 points, 27 rebounds in that series. But once again, you know, Bill Russell, the Bill Russell Wilt Chamberlain dynamic, which you touched on a little bit last week, was so key to all of this, because Wilt comes in this era and should have just won. He should have been the one. Really, when you look at the talents and his abilities, he should have been the one holding a handful of rings. But Bill Russell continues to keep him in check. In fact, that series where Wilt averages 29 points a game, that was a year where he scored 37 points a game during the course of the regular season. And Russell comes in and holds him basically to 8 points less than his regular scoring average, which, you know, you can't stop Wilt Chamberlain. But if anybody was able to play Wilt Chamberlain and frustrate him and make him less of what he normally was, make him a little bit more normal, it was Bill Russell.
Yeah, Russell had a couple of advantages over Chamberlain. He had the better basketball IQ, and he also had continuity. Bill Russell did. He played for two coaches, Red Auerbach and himself.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Wilt played for 4 different teams and 8 head coaches, and he had some disagreements along the way, and that's why he moved around, why he got traded, despite being like a Superman. He got traded a couple of times, and he forced his way out, forced coaching changes. He wasn't easy to get along with. There was no book written by Wilt about how he had a great relationship with his coach.
So, right. Right.
That's an enormous advantage over a course of a career for Bill Russell over Wilt Chamberlain.
And so the Celtics get through, again, they get through Wilt. They win a championship.
By the way, excuse me.
Yeah.
Let me just real quick add that those Warriors that the Celtics beat in five, they didn't just have Wilt. They had Nate Thurmond.
That's right.
Nate Thurmond is also a Hall of Fame center. He, in that series, he averaged 11 points, 13 rebounds. He's like a gigantic individual human being. And he and Wilt on the court at the same time, the Celtics still won easily.
Easily, like we said, in five games. Then the Celtics get back to beating the Lakers. The Lakers come back into the picture. At this point, Wilt is back in Philly, right? He gets traded to the 76ers. So he's back in Philly. The 76ers team back then, they have Hal Greer, Chet Walker, another great Celtics team, but the Celtics get through Philly in 1965. This is where you start catching these games.
Yes.
So what do you remember? Do you remember this series?
I don't know much about it. I mean, not that I witnessed. I was still living in Brooklyn then. I was a high schooler mm-hmm. at that point. I told the story last week of my friend Joe, my best friend. Yep. We're still best friends. And he decided to be a Celtics fan, so I went along with him. And that was, not to overstate it or make it so dramatic, but that was a life-changing decision for us. We would have been Knicks fans otherwise.
Oh, God. Let's take a second to just pause to really appreciate what a bullet you dodged there. Instead of talking about the Celtics, I've lost track of what championship we're on now. You'd be sitting there wondering, you'd be talking about Dolan selling the team.
I would be not a happy person. My life actually would have been different. This is, I'm sure people can relate to this on some level. That you follow a team, whatever team it might be, it makes an impact on you. For me, I started following them, as you said, 1965. And living in Brooklyn, we would go to the old Madison Square Garden, and we could get in for a dollar with our high school ID card. Jeez. A dollar to sit in the end balcony. And that was when they had 8 teams. And the Celtics would come in like five times per season to play the Knicks. And so we would go every time. And then when it came time to decide where to go to college, this is true. I literally chose to go to Boston University, a large part because then I could go to the Celtic games.
Wow.
So, I did want to go to BU anyway.
But
it wasn't $75,000 back then for a year. So I did want to go there. But the icing on the cake was that I could go to see the Celtics.
That's awesome. That's awesome. When I was in college at Emerson, my dorms were right outside of Kenmore Square. So I was right on Charles Gate East for my first mm-hmm. 2 years. Charles Gate East and Beacon Street, which is now like million-dollar luxury condos. Which, when you think about what happened in college, like my freshman and sophomore years, it's really insane to think that some super rich person is like sitting where I used to sleep. I was right there in that area. I only went to a couple of games in the old garden. I was a big Shaq fan when I was a sophomore. Like, I watched a lot of LSU. I was like, oh, man, I love those Orlando Magic teams. Like, I actually had, like, an Orlando Magic, like, hat back then.
Wow.
I was like, yeah. I mean, as big as the Celtics guys I was like, I felt like Orlando was like super cool. Like they were the expansion team. Like I can, you know, I can kind of root for these guys. They, you know, Shaq is awesome. Penny was awesome. Like I, there was no built in like hatred there. So I'm like, I can watch that. I can watch that and enjoy it. I never saw them as a real threat, but, so I took a specific trip to see Shaq play in his prime.
Well, ironically, the Magic won the final game ever played at Boston Garden.
Did they really? I didn't realize.
Yeah, that was the Celtics played them in the playoffs.
Oh.
The one year that Dominique Wilkins played.
Right. Oh, man.
And the Magic won the series pretty easily, and they won the closeout game in Boston. So
I forgot all about that. There are no sports on TV. We're so desperate for sports. We're watching guys play video games, and soon we'll be watching them play horse because real sports, the competition that we know and love and the things we like to bet on, are gone. But my bookie is not going to let you down. You can stay sane and entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or if you're quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to end. With my bookie, they're going to help you out. Even if video poker is not your thing, but if you still need a fix, they've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers. Live casino dealers. I love this. Professional dealers at their table, live on site, 24/7. That's pretty cool. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Don't sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands. If you like that stuff, you can wager on it. Virtual action right there for you to bet on. Straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you could always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of the shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like this. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit, and you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750 on mybookie.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, so back to 65. This is a big Sam Jones series. Sam Jones, Celtics win this. They beat the Sixers in seven before they go on to face the Lakers. Sam Jones.
So the Havlicek stole the ball series.
Yes. So Sam Jones has 40 points in game two. He's got 36 in game four. 37 in that game seven. He's the one who ends up with the ball. Havlicek right. steals it over to Sam Jones is the call. People forget like that's like a signature moment in Celtics history.
One of the great moments in NBA history.
But Bill Russell made a critical mistake in turning the ball over and putting the Celtics in a position to have to make that play.
Yeah, there were used to be wires attached to the backboards, and those wires stretched over to the wall in part of the seating area so that they would hold the basket steady. And you had to be careful, though, because the wires were sort of in the way, and Russell trying to inbound the ball with 5 seconds left hit the wire with the ball. That was a violation. Philly got the ball back down one with a chance to win the series.
Think about that for a second. There's just the wires. This is how the nowadays you have like the stanchion, you got that hydraulic thing. Back then, you have wires attached to walls holding the basket in place. Like, that feels so primitive when you look at it. But there it is. So Russell throws it off one of the wires, and the Sixers have the ball, and it's up to Havlicek to make this play. And now he tells the story where he's thinking, okay, I've got a count in my head. He's talking about Red Auerbach told him, like, you have to find a way to get an edge. So Hal Greer has the ball, and he's going to inbound. And Havlicek says, I could actually try to time the pass and have a shot at deflecting or stealing the inbounds pass, so I started counting. 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. When he gets to 1,004, he knows that ball has to come in. So he makes a break for the ball, and he gets that tip, and it goes over to Sam Jones, and the Celtics win this series. Another close call where the Celtics almost – now, they were up, so Philly still would have had to make a shot. There's no guarantee that even if Havlicek didn't steal it, that the ball wouldn't have gotten to somebody and been missed. But, you know, they have Wilt. They could have – somehow that ball in 5 seconds could have gotten somewhere near the basket. Celtics end up winning this game by one.
Well, let me say to be fair, Havlicek made a great play, anticipation, but it was one of the worst inbounds plays of all time. Okay. There wasn't exactly a Brad Stevens ATO. They didn't do anything to Philly. They just stood there and no pick set or nobody made a cut or anything. They just tried to throw the ball out deep to Chet Walker, and presumably he would have then thrown it into Chamberlain down low. But Havlicek didn't have to fight through anything to get to the ball. He just waited and, as you said, counted and knew when to move. So it was really a poor play. No wonder it got picked off. And you know what? They might have scored, but if they gave it to Wilt, he would have been fouled for sure. If they had any chance of stopping him, they would have hacked him to make him go to the line. He shot 6 for 13 that day. Mm-hmm. That was like average for him.
Right.
46%.
He was terrible.
So he misses 7 free throws and they lose by a point. That's the story of Wilt's career right there.
Well, yeah, there you go. I mean, that's everything in a nutshell for sure. I'm watching this play again because as you're talking, I'm like looking at, first of all, one of my favorite things, if you go back and Google the Havlicek stole the ball, the old scoreboard with the dials.
Oh, yeah. The clock that you probably couldn't decipher very easily.
Yeah, but it's it's really funny what it used to be. You think about the technology nowadays of big, huge jumbotrons with video on them. These are like three Timex watches on the scoreboard. So, yeah, they really ran nothing. You had Wilt kind of posting up Bill Russell. Yeah, Havlicek just made a break for the ball, and, like, Sam Jones is right there. He tipped it over to Sam Jones. He dribbles it out. And then, of course, fans just going nuts. That's the other thing. I see in the video, like, Havlicek shoots it. It comes off, and some dude in the stands grabs the ball, shoulder blocks somebody, and just runs off with the ball. So, I don't know. I'm sure if we Google it, we can figure out who has that ball somewhere. But he tips it over to Sam Jones. Sam Jones dribbles it out, gives it over to Havlicek. Havlicek just tosses one up at the buzzer, and some dude in a suit grabs it. Seriously, just elbow, like, shoulders somebody out of the way, and he runs out of the arena. So
I remember reading Havlicek's account of that afterward, and he said the fans were all clutching at him and grabbing his jersey.
Yeah.
And he got injured shoulders practically from the stirrups.
Yes.
Or the whatever you would call that, the
yeah.
part that goes over your shoulders on the jersey, was being pulled down so hard that he was getting strangled by it.
Yeah, that you can see it. You can see it as the fans are kind of like mobbing him, how that's being pulled. So, okay, so the Celtics, now we're, this is 65. They beat the Lakers in five. This is a by all accounts, the Philly series obviously is a much more difficult series. Jerry West has a huge series for the Lakers, averaging almost 34 points a game, but really they have no other help. And the Celtics kind of cruise in five games over the Lakers in 65. What do you remember from the 65 finals?
Well, let's see. That was a five-game series, and Sam Jones averaged almost 28 points a game. You just were talking about the Philly series, and he scored 37, you mentioned, in Game 7. Forgotten, right?
Right.
Because the only thing anybody remembers is the Havlicek steal.
Right.
But 37 points in a Game 7 would be like, oh, my God. Twitter would break, you know. And so then in the finals, yeah, he dominated. Sam did. And not quite as many points as Jerry West, but... not as many shots either.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. The Celtics then, next year, they just keep on marching. This is the last win in a row. This is 66. The 65-66 finals are the last, right, of Red Auerbach's. This is Red Auerbach's final championship as coach. And he turns things over to Bill Russell. That 66 season, so many of these seasons kind of meld together in the 60s. It feels like one long march. But the Celtics didn't have an easy time with the Lakers this time around. And they ended up winning this game in seven. What do you remember from the 66?
This was a wild series because the Lakers won the first game in Boston. Took a 1-0 lead in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Celtics won the next game in Boston. Then they went to L.A. for two games, and the Celtics won both. So they had a 3-1 lead, and everyone knew Red was retiring. He announced that before the season, and he basically said, okay, everybody, you get one more shot to beat me. you know, he
such
was...
such a red thing to say.
Red didn't give a crap, you know.
No.
he did what he felt he wanted to do. And he had announced Russell's hiring as the coach, player coach, prior to the finals. He felt that was sort of a motivational ploy that would take a little of the attention off the Lakers. I don't know, maybe people thought that the Lakers were – going to win that series. You know, I mean, I expect they would figure they would finally break through at some point.
Mm-hmm.
They just never did. But anyway, Russell, the best person for him to play for was himself. They decided that there really was no other coach that could come in and do the job. That Russell's personality, he was better off being the coach. And he didn't have an assistant coach either.
Nobody had assistants back then, right?
No. Anyway, back to the series. They were up 3-1, and Red is about to retire. And so then they have game five in Boston. They lose. They go to L.A. They lose again. Now suddenly it's a game seven. Now, if, you know, back then, like, I was new to this, so I didn't really know. If this ever happened today, I would be a basket case, you know? almost blowing or you're up 3-1 in the finals and then you almost give it away.
Yeah.
So they went to game 7 in the Garden, and the Celtics led most of the way, and they had, a 6-point lead with 16 seconds left. Now, you know, Red used to light the cigar, mm-hmm. right? It was literally the victory cigar. He did this all through his career. Whenever the team had a game in the bag, he would light a cigar and smoke it on the bench. And it really pissed off everybody else. That's why he did it, right?
Sure.
So now it's the last game, and he's going to light the victory cigar. And the Massachusetts governor, John Volpe, in the tradition of politicians trying to get in on a spotlight, he was there to light the cigar. The game was on TV, but, you know, it wasn't even like a network telecast back then.
Mm-hmm.
That was still the dark ages as far as sports on TV, especially the NBA. Anyway, they're up 6. They light the cigar. Suddenly the Celtics are committing turnovers all over the place. And the Lakers get to within 2. There's still a few seconds left. And the Celtics inbound the ball and somehow Casey Jones managed to get it over to somebody, and they ran out the clock. But they were up 10 with like a minute left. And I do remember that Sam Jones hit a long shot, a bomb, which would have been a 3 today, but back then wasn't, of course, only 2. And they basically had it in the bag. So they almost gave it away. That would have been the worst thing possible, because they never had lost a game after Red lit his cigar. That was his final game. They managed to keep that record perfect.
So we mentioned John Havlicek. We have to go back and talk about the fact that he was drafted in 1962. And now Havlicek in these runs, this 65-66 is his first all-star season. Havlicek obviously becomes the Celtics' all-time leading scorer. So Havlicek comes in, and now you add this another key piece to Havlicek, to the Celtics. Let's talk a little bit about Havlicek here, because
okay.
We've talked about Sam Jones and Bill Russell, and now Havlicek is now a few years into his Celtics career. Now we're starting to see at this point the true greatness of John Havlicek. But he's a guy, like his claim to fame is being able to run forever. He actually had this kind of genetic thing where weren't his lungs bigger than normal?
It might have been that, or I know he said his heartbeat was around 40, his normal heartbeat.
It's insane.
So he could, he never seemed to sweat. He could run all day, and he just didn't get tired. There were a lot of times where in the playoffs he played 48 minutes. Of course, that wasn't that uncommon back then, but, he'd do it for an entire series. You know, he's an example again of good luck that the Celtics had. He and also Casey Jones almost played in the NFL.
Yeah.
They both had tryouts. Casey, I think, was with the Rams, and Havlicek with the Browns. He was from Ohio. He tried out for the Browns as a wide receiver, and he was like the last person cut. If he had made the team, who knows? Maybe he would have played football.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of an insane, another kind of, if he had made that team, I mean, he was, and Tommy Heinsohn actually called him like a wide receiver. He said that He was like a wide receiver in football. He would run and catch long passes from Cousy for layups. And so he could really execute the run and gun style that the Celtics wanted to play. Not only did he play in basically every game, he'd play a lot of minutes as his career went on. And we'll get into more of him, because the big Havlicek, I think, Havlicek really steps into his own in the 70s. And, you know, he starts averaging like 40-plus minutes a game starting in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. He had to be the man at that point, because Russell and Sam had retired, and almost all of his Hall of Fame teammates were retired or at the end of the line by then. You could see, he had a couple of years where he did lead the league in minutes played.
You could see, like, as the years go on, he needs to do a little bit more. So 65-66 is his first All-Star season. He averages 18 points a game, or almost 19 points a game. But then the following year, 21 points a game, little 21 and a half, 20, just about 21 the year after that, 21 and a half the year after that. Then, you know, he really starts that 69-70. So we'll save this conversation, the deep Havlicek conversation, because 69-70, he starts averaging 24 points a game, and he goes on a big run. And he won, he was the MVP, right? What year was he the MVP?
In the finals, 1974.
Finals MVP, yeah. So he, so Havlicek goes from kind of like supporting player to the guy later on. So the conversation with Havlicek kind of spans two decades.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that Red almost blew it on his last lighting of his cigar, but the Celtics managed to win that. They now, at this point in history, have won 8 straight titles. They do not win a 9th straight, and that is the first year that Bill Russell is the head coach. So that is an historic thing that happens, and we're going to start talking about that tomorrow. Bill Russell becomes the first black head coach in NBA history. This is insane. At the time, the late 60s, this is a huge, huge deal. And it's the last few years of Bill Russell's time in Boston altogether. And as you'll hear tomorrow, that is a surprise. It ends in surprising fashion. So tomorrow, Friday, the end of the 1960s, the end of the winning streak, the end of Bill Russell's time in Boston. And that takes us up to a transition in Boston Celtics history, the 1970s, which we'll talk about next week. So be sure to subscribe if you're not a subscriber. Follow us on Spotify if you haven't done that. If you're a Spotify listener, please do that. That is very helpful. Anywhere you can give a 5-star rating, a good written review is very, very helpful. We're here for you Monday through Friday still, giving you content throughout this hiatus, trying to keep you somewhat, some sense of normalcy. It helps us too. It helps me too. You know, me sitting here doing these podcasts is me maintaining my own level of normalcy. So it helps me to do these, and hopefully it helps you kind of kill a half hour just trying to be normal again. And we'll get through all of this, but you know, until we do, this is going to be how we do it. We're going to get through it with our continued deep dive into Boston Celtics history. So I hope you're enjoying it enough to subscribe. I hope you're enjoying it enough to share it with your friends and tell everybody that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.